Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 402, titled Pincers Movement. This is being recorded on March 9th of 2003. As indicated in side one, the title basically alludes to what I believe is taking place, or at least there are indications that this is taking place, which is that the Underground Reich's assault on the United States involves not only Islamofascists from without, but also domestic white supremacists from within. One of the things to consider is that we've heard about the attacks on the World Trade Center and on the Pentagon. Remember the anthrax attacks as well. There has been almost no recent discussion of that. More about that, time permitting, later. Be aware when I make references to other programs that there are article-length descriptions of each For the Record program in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. The description for 402 will be up within a week or so. Be aware also that sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent shows are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs available for download only at a longer URL linked to both the wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. Spitfire also stocks all of the lectures and the old archive shows that I've done as well. I do not get profit from that arrangement. Now, what we're going to look at during the first part of this side of the broadcast is some review material of a couple of the links between Islamofascists or Middle Eastern terrorists, allegedly Iraqi in at least one case, and the milieu of the Oklahoma City bombing as well. These seemingly diverse elements do in fact have common connections and a common foundation in the virtual state that I call the Underground Reich. We've spoken about that in many broadcasts. What we're going to look at is a review of an article that is reprinted in its entirety in For the Record 373. You can listen to it, courtesy of WFMU, or read about it on the Spitfire website. This is also discussed in For the Record 380. And this concerns a motel outside Oklahoma City, which was apparently used for the staging of the Oklahoma City bombing by Timothy McVeigh in combination with men of Middle Eastern extraction, allegedly Iraqi, according to some sources. That remains to be precisely determined. But there certainly appears to have been a Middle Eastern / Islamofascist link to the Oklahoma City bombing milieu. And bearing in mind what we looked at in side one, the allegations of Colleen Rowley concerning Zaharias Moussaoui, Zaharias Moussaoui and Mohammed Atta's links in a crop dusting plane used in the Turner Diaries that inspired Timothy McVeigh to attack the Pentagon in a low-level suicide aerial attack that is the culmination of the Turner Diaries. This article is from the LA Weekly of July 26th through August 1st of 2002. Research credit on this goes to a listener. This article is by Jim Krogan, C-R-O-G-A-N. It's titled The Terrorist Motel, the I-40 Connection Between Zaharias Moussaoui and Mohammed Atta. Again, this article is read in its entirety and reprinted in its entirety in For the Record 373. I'm simply going to repeat the first three paragraphs. They sum up the argument. What happened at the nondescript roadside motel outside Oklahoma City was just a fleeting encounter during the twisted, cross-country odyssey of the terrorists who would carry out the September 11th attacks, Mohammed Atta, alleged leader of the plot, and two companions wanted to rent a room, but couldn't get the deal they wanted, so they left. It was an incident of no particular importance except for one thing. The owner of the motel remembers Atta being in the company of Zaharias Moussaoui, the so-called 20th hijacker, who was arrested prior to September 11th and now faces conspiracy charges in connection with the terror assaults. If this recollection is correct, the entire incident and its absence from the public record raises new questions about the FBI investigation of Moussaoui and even the 1995 destruction of the federal building in Oklahoma City. Already, the FBI has endured a withering political and media critique for failing to aggressively investigate Moussaoui and his contacts during his 4 weeks in custody prior to the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Some FBI officials have responded by characterizing Moussaoui as only a minor player. But the report from the motel owner, if proven, could change that, and it could also force the FBI to reopen its investigation of Middle Eastern connections to the 1995 Oklahoma City blast, because convicted bombers Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols reportedly stayed at the same motel, interacting with a group of Iraqis during the weeks before the bombing. And we've spoken about this article, and again, it is read in its entirety and reprinted in its entirety in For the Record 373. Note that this particular motel was of interest to the hijackers, to the September 11th perps, and they did not want to stay at another motel, despite the fact that they were more reasonably priced motels closer to Oklahoma City. This same motel was the motel of choice, so to speak, for Timothy McVeigh and his unnamed Middle Eastern associates. By the way, in connection with the Turner Diaries that we looked at and that was the role model for the order for Timothy McVeigh, and that involves a low-level suicide aerial attack on the Pentagon by a crop-dusting plane, note that Larry Ford, a doctor and a person with connections to the South African Biological Warfare Weapons Program and to the CIA, who was also in connection with right-wing extremist groups, he also was inspired by the Turner Diaries, as we looked at in For the Record program 386. Now, with regard to another Middle Eastern connection to the Oklahoma City investigation, and this is the Philippines connection. We've talked about this in For the Record program number 92, and we came back to it in For the Record 354, 357, 358, and 359. This article is from the Manila Times of April 2nd of 2002. The article is by Dorian Zumel Sicat, S-I-C-A-T, and it was headlined by the Manila Times, Deathbed Confession, Abu, that's a reference to Abu Sayyaf, part of Oklahoma Blast. The article reads in part as follows, skipping down. By the way, this refers to Edwin Angeles, who wanted to give testimony at the Oklahoma City bombing trial but was forbidden to do so. Among the most interesting revelations that Angeles shared with Elmina, that is Elmina Abdul, the widow of Edwin Angeles, again beginning, among the most interesting revelations that Angeles shared with Elmina was about a meeting between himself, Ramzi Youssef, parenthetically the architect of the first World Trade Center attack, Abdul Murad, both of whom are now serving multiple prison terms for terrorist activities, including the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, Abdurrazzaq Abubakar Janjalani, unidentified members of the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, or MILF, and two men who Angeles identified only as Iraqis. The meeting, according to Elmina, was held in a warehouse near a Dole, Philippines plant in South Cotabato between General Santos City and Davao del Sur. There were two other men at that meeting, a man whom Angeles identified as Nichols and as codename Farmer, unquote, and another American whom he did not identify by name. It's important to note that most Filipinos commonly describe Caucasians in the country as Americans. The meeting, according to Elmina, took place in 1994. She could not remember the exact date. Quote, in that meeting, according to Elmina, Angeles told her that the major topic of the discussion was the bombing of specific targets and how to build bombs. Angeles told Elmina that Nichols was later sent to a place that he, Angeles, didn't name for more detailed instruction on how Nichols and his other American, unquote, friend could build a bomb to destroy a building in the United States. She did not specify, she could not remember, which building that was to be. Elmina also told me that before he was gunned down, Edwin showed her documents that proved that he actually was a deep cover agent for the Department of National Defense. He said that those documents were presented in court in his defense and that that was the reason he was acquitted of the charges against him. That is a matter of record. But since I have never seen the documents, I will not name the high-ranking, unquote, defense officials whose signatures were said to appear on those documents. By the way, one of the plans that was discussed in this meeting was the so-called Operation Bojinka, which is actually a Croatian word, to hijack a number of American airliners over the Pacific and blow them up. This was said to be the seed plan for the attack on the for the World Trade Center attack on September 11th. By the way, I would note that the white supremacists who were represented by Kirk Lyons and acquitted of sedition had been plotting an attack on the Oklahoma City Federal Building in the 1980s, or at least allegedly had been plotting that. They were acquitted. Now, noting the people who were at this particular meeting, according to Edwin Angeles. By the way, I would note that one of the complicating factors with regard to al-Qaeda is the fact that obviously the Afghans, so to speak, the Islamic veterans of the Afghan War, received sponsorship not only from the CIA, but from the Saudi and Pakistani intelligence services, and there was active recruitment throughout the Muslim world for many years by these intelligence services. These same elements, not unlike the Galen organization, Nazis then turned on the United States. This country's epitaph may turn out to be something that Alan Dulles voiced in the post-war period, that basically we should recruit, quote, any bastard for the CIA, again, quoting, as long as they're anti-communist. Well, they were anti-communist, but also very anti-American. What we're going to take a look at now concerns the operations of Abu Sayyaf, the al-Qaeda affiliate in the Philippines, its links to the Saudi Wahhabi proselytization effort, and to organized crime. And after this, we're going to take a look at organized crime and al-Qaeda's growing presence in parts of Latin America as well. We're going to turn now to the book Dollars for Terror, subtitled The United States in Islam. This was authored by Richard LaBeviere, published in softcover by Algora Press, and translated by Martin Demers. The full annotation will be in the description for the record program number 402. Now, of Abu Sayyaf, the al-Qaeda affiliate in the Philippines, of the individual whom Edwin Angeles describes as being present along with Terry Nichols, a.k.a. the Farmer. This is Abu Bakar Janjalani, this again is the Abu Sayyaf affiliate of al-Qaeda. A situation of generalized civil war again set ablaze the Muslim provinces of the southern Philippines, especially since a third radical Islamist component had emerged. This one preached an eternal, quote, holy war, unquote, until the advent of an authentically Islamic state. Quote, the Abu Sayyaf group developed on the island of Basilan. Its extreme standpoint and the violence of its methods quickly made up for its lack of representativeness. The chief of the group, Abu Bakar Abdurazak Janjalani, defied the MNLF leadership and set out to recruit all the disappointed Muslims, unquote. That was the fellow present at the meeting with Edwin Angeles and with Terry Nichols, according to Angeles. In 1995, this group massacred the 100 inhabitants of the Christian village of Ipil on the island of Mindanao. The Abu Sayyaf group, the sword bearer, had approximately 1,000 combatants, including, quote, Afghans, unquote, trained in the Taliban camps in Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, and Sudan. During the trial of the World Trade Center bombers, 1993, The explosives expert of the team, Ramzi Ahmed Youssef, admitted having planned the operation together with, quote, Afghans at one of the Abu Sayyaf group's bases. According to various police sources, the same organization, also behind the attack against a Philippine Airlines Boeing 747 flying the Manila-Tokyo route in December of 1994, the toll, one dead and 20 wounded, mainly Japanese. It apparently also prepared an attack against the Pope in Manila during the pontifical visit in January of 1995. According to the Thai intelligence services, the Abu Sayyaf group is financed by Osama bin Laden through his brother-in-law, Mohammed Jamal Khalif, regional manager of a Saudi NGO. The Philippine Daily Inquirer of August 23, 1998, adds that, quote, in recent years, bin Laden was a frequent visitor to the Philippines, in particular in the area of Mindanao, unquote. However, the Saudi does not show up on the Philippine authorities' blacklist. Established at the request of Interpol, this list counts 519 terrorists and international criminals from 19 countries. The Philippine president's chief of staff even recalls that in the Philippines, quote, Osama bin Laden is known for his philanthropic activities in several Muslim organizations that are active in the South, where they support the poor Muslim population, unquote. According to the same sources, bin Laden's brother-in-law is said to bring financial help to the Gamaa Islamiya, who claim to have been behind the Luxor massacre. His collaboration with Osama bin Laden also means that he must have worked with the Palestinian and Jordanian Muslim Brothers, parenthetically the Muslim Brothers, linked to the Third Reich and to the Afghan effort in the 1980s, are the central element behind the Al-Taqwa milieu, which also has very strong links to the ethnic outreach organization of the Republican Party, and is one of the central elements in the September 11th imbroglio. Continuing. Lastly, bin Laden's import-export companies in Sudan were once one of the principal business outlets of the two partners. Talking about the organized crime links here, and we're going to make a jump to the organized crime connections in Latin America, these connections often parallel those of the drug trade. In the Philippines, experts estimate the annual production of marijuana at $1.5 billion a year, going up by approximately 10% yearly. For that alone, the narcotics traffic would be more than $10 billion, that is, half of the Philippine state budget. Admittedly, the Islamists do not control all of these flows, but the Abu Sayyaf group plays a big part. Its mercenaries look after the protection of transport and the shipping of cargoes via jungle airports in the islands of Basilan, Sulu, and Jolo. By the same air channels and also by sea, weapons are delivered for the group's combat units. This supply chain is managed by Pakistani intermediaries who were trained directly in the Afghan camps around Peshawar. For a few years now, the religious dimension of the fight carried out by the Abu Sayyaf group has been subsumed in activities that are closer to organized crime than to revolutionary Islamism. Raised in the context of a holy war, unquote, the, quote, new Afghans, unquote, often end up as mercenaries in the traditional circuits of organized crime. And conversely, some find the religious alibi a good means of whitewashing their primary activities that relate purely and simply to organized crime. Terrorism can lead to anything, as long as you can get out. These narco-Islamist currents emerge in the Indian Ocean, quote, the new heart of the world, unquote, that opens the routes to Europe from the southernmost ports of Sindh and Balochistan, from southern Africa, and Latin America. Noting two articles briefly linking the milieu of the Muslim Brotherhood and the milieu of the First World Trade Center attack to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, a top Al-Qaeda aide that was arrested this past week. First of all, from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, March 6th of 2003, Juliet Terziev, article, Al-Qaeda leader lived in VIP oasis in Rawalpindi, talking about Mohammed Sheikh Khalid. Mohammed, the son of a devout Pakistani living in Kuwait, joined the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood as a teenager before moving west to get an engineering degree at the North Carolina Agricultural and Technical Institute in 1986, and linking Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to the Operation Bojinka milieu and the First World Trade Center attack and the Philippine-slash-Islamist-slash-organized-crime milieu that we just spoke about. Article from the New York Times of Saturday, March 8th of 2003 by James Risen and David Johnston, Al-Qaeda aid slipped away long before September 11th attack, and this alludes to an earlier attempt to arrest Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in Qatar. Skipping down. Mr. Mohammed first came to the attention of American counterterrorist officials in 1995 as a result of his role in a Philippine-based plan hatched with his relative, Ramzi Youssef, to blow up as many as a dozen American airliners as they crossed the Pacific. This was to be followed by a dramatic series of terrorist strikes against the United States, that again linking Khalid Sheikh Mohammed not only to the Muslim Brotherhood, but also to the milieu of the First World Trade Center attack, and by extension to the domestic element of this pincers movement, the white supremacist movement in the United States. By the way, I suspect that the anthrax attacks Remember them? Don't hear much about them. I suspect that the anthrax attacks that took place in the wake of September 11th, directed to the media and to key members of the Democratic Party, constitute the domestic element of this pincers movement. It would appear that the elements of the Islamo-fascist movement are now moving into Latin America. There have been indications of this for some time. The Financial Times of Wednesday, March 5th of 2003, had an article by Andy Webb Vidal in Miami headlined, "Terrorist groups are, quote, relocating to U.S. backyard," unquote. It reads in part, "The U.S. faces a growing risk from both Middle Eastern terrorists relocating to Latin America and terror groups from the region," a top U.S. military official has warned. General James Hill, commander of U.S. Southern Command, told Latin American military officers and regional intelligence analysts in Miami yesterday that groups such as Hezbollah, the militant Shia Muslim group, had established bases in Latin America. "These groups were taking advantage of smuggling hotspots such as the tri-border area," unquote, joining Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay, and Venezuela's Margarita Island to channel funds to terrorist groups around the world. U.S. officials are also worried that weak state institutions are making the region a haven for operatives affiliated to groups such as Al-Qaeda, who may flee the Middle East in the wake of a war in Iraq. And skipping down of Venezuela, Fernando Falcón, a former Venezuelan state security police chief, said, quote, "If I were Al-Qaeda, I would be setting up in Venezuela right now." I would note in this context that Venezuela has been departing from a pro-U.S. oil line. I would note also that Hugo Chavez, the head of Venezuela, appointed Carlos the Jackal's brother as the top energy official in Venezuela. Carlos the Jackal, a protege of François Genoux, of whom we spoke earlier, and I would note that a Genoux protege, Jacques Vergès' law partner, is the French consul for Zaharias Moussaoui. And so again, a sort of Yaquiite third position, General Haushofer-like third world alliance against the United States, perhaps coupled with a white supremacist domestic element of this pincers movement, is one of the things that we're looking at in the context of what we have been discussing. What we're going to look at next concerns the Latin American component of organized crime and Islamism. And we're going to take a look at the area of Ciudad del Este, the very area alluded to in that Financial Times article. Turning once again to Dollars for Terror, once an obligatory way station for war criminals and other fleeing Nazis, the region known as, quote, the Three Borders, Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay, is considered by anti-terrorist experts to be a new base of radical Islamism. By the way, this book was published in English in 2000. Often, intelligence agencies have traced the leaders of Hezbollah, Hamas, and the International Organization of the Muslim Brotherhood to this area. Forming a triangle between the towns of Puerto Iguazu, Argentina, Foz de Iguaçu, Brazil, and Ciudad del Este of Paraguay, the area holds a population of more than 400,000, a quarter of them foreigners, with strong Near Eastern communities, especially Lebanese. At the center, the site of the marvelous waterfalls of Iguaçu hosts more than 40,000 visitors a year, which makes the identification and the monitoring of people particularly difficult. In addition, the topography, crisscrossed by innumerable rivers and streams, makes it impossible to get an overall view. This tormented physical and human geography encourages all sorts of traffic. Ciudad del Este has thus become the Latin American capital for counterfeiting and for the smuggling of weapons and explosives. Weapons come from the United States via Paraguay and are destined for the markets of Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo. They follow the route to Foz de Iguaçu across the border of Paraguay at Mato Grosso do Sul. Small landing strips in the region are also used for delivering cargoes and drugs. Talking about the Islamist links to this particular area, the mosque of Foz de Iguaçu, which also has a Quran school, regularly receives visits by religious dignitaries and Saudi businessmen, although the communities are mainly Shiite. In 1997, the Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri, former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri, was the honorary guest of the Arab community of Ciudad del Este. Accompanied by a delegation of Gulf financiers, he was mainly interested in Near Eastern investments in the region. At the time, the police services identified a close collaborator of Osama bin Laden in his retinue. Skipping down again of the link between organized crime and Islamism and, in turn, international fascism. The influence of the mafias is never so great and so dangerous, actually beginning again. Whether in Latin America or in Beirut, these business milieu, plural, reveal the osmosis that is going on between the criminal hierarchies and the legal structures of economic and financial activity worldwide. It is symptomatic that when one finds the heads of various criminal groups, one reaches the limit of the criminal activity at the same time. The influence of the mafias is never so great and so dangerous as when they leverage their criminal activities to ply all the levers that legal society offers in order to subvert that legality itself. Money laundering is not only a monetary activity aiming to legalize dirty money by injecting it into licit economic sectors, it is also exerted on organizations and elite groups that also wish to be made respectable. Quote, one point is essential. Organized crime is not only a problem of criminality anymore, it is too broad a topic these days to be entrusted solely to the criminologists. The economy of crime was based in the legal economy. If you make a clean distinction between organized crime and the sphere of finance, you are condemned to not understand either one. Certainly, it is more comfortable to regard the mafias and the criminal organizations as malevolent foreign powers. Reality is less appealing and more complex. Criminality has become an essential gear in the engine of contemporary societies, unquote. And indeed, the failure to interdict some of the offshore economic pipelines that we've spoken about, in particular in connection with Lucy Commissar in For the Record 387, is one of the enabling factors for Islamic terrorism. By the way, in connection with the Ciudad, the Three Corners area of Latin America, note also that there is a link between the AMIA bombing in Argentina, allegedly, and the Oklahoma City bombing that we've spoken about in a number of broadcasts, including For the Record number 330. I would also note that in Serpent's Walk, the devastating biological warfare attack that destroys much of the U.S. and that ultimately leads to the Nazi takeover of the United States, basically many of the biological agents are imported through the drug routes. And again, the novels like The Serpent's Diaries, like Serpent's Walk and The Turner Diaries are intended as teaching tools by the National Alliance, which in turn, as we've seen in many programs, is closely connected to the NPD, the top German, quote, neo-unquote Nazi party, with links to people like Horst Mahler and to Ahmed Huber of Al-Taqwa. Remember that the programs are being archived on Real Audio by WFMU. WFMU.org/Dave Emery has more recent programs, older shows for download only on a longer URL linked to both that URL and to the For the Record section of SpitfireList.com. Spitfire has all of the programs that I've done over the years available for a modest fee that I do not get money from. There will be an article-length, detailed description of For the Record 402 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website within a week or so of the airing of this program. This concludes For the Record program number 402, Pincers Movement, being recorded on March 9th of the year 2003. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.